if you are thinking about your children and you want the safety of your children, the future of this country, get up, be involved, see what you can offer.
Flag was hoisted before the world.
What does it mean, fight back?
We have a long fight ahead of us.
Here I am.
Here I am.
Here we are.
Here I am.
Here I am with Shai Davidai.
My guest today is an Israeli American Ethiopian Jew and Nassau County legislator Mazi Pilip. Thank you so much for being here, Mazi.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you, Shai, for having me.
We there's so many things that I want to talk about with you, and it's there's so many questions, but I always start with the same question. Mazi, what kind of a Jew are you?
It's a hard question.
It is. I start with the hard ones, but it is the most important.
A proud Jew.
What makes you proud?
Being a Jew, having this rich culture and values that a nation that care for others, making me a proud Jew. Yeah.
And, you know, and I introduced you, you have so many different identities and you know, Israeli, American, Ethiopian, Jew. You spent you were born and raised first 12 years of your life in Ethiopia.
Yes.
You arrived in Israel in Mivta Shlomo,
yes.
Solomon operation.
Yes.
Before we get to that, what was it like being a Jew in Ethiopia?
So we grew up in a small village in Ethiopia, south of Addis Ababa, the capital of Ethiopia. We were a few families, Jewish families in that area. Mainly the Ethiopian Jew used to live in the north of Ethiopia, which is Gondar area. And for most of us, it wasn't popular to talk about Judaism at all. If you have even a small, tiny blood of Judaism on you, you want to hide it because you were different and you want to make sure you are surviving. So we don't talk about Judaism that much. And we had a very simple life, you know, a village-style life with little, really little access to education, little basic things to survive. But my grandmother always told us that one day we will go to Jerusalem. And we were hoping that day to come.
So she knew.
Yes.
She was praying, hoping, and knowing that one day you will make it to Israel.
Exactly. So she will tell us the stories that one day we're going to go to Jerusalem. And that was the thing that really kept so many of us, you know, with that hope that it's going to happen. And that's the hope that was passing from generation to generation until really a miracle took place in 1991 when Israel brought 14,500 Ethiopian Jew in the middle of a civil war in Ethiopia.
So tell me about that. What was your experience as a 12-year-old bat mitzvah age girl coming from Ethiopia to Israel? What was the route like? What was the journey? And I ask because a lot of people know the statistics, they know the history, but they don't know what it feels like.
So about 2 years before 1991, the Israeli embassy opened in Addis Ababa, and they were trying to take slowly a few families a month to Israel. So when they opened the embassy, a lot of us moved from everywhere, from any corner of Ethiopia to come to close to the center, to Addis Ababa. When we arrived to Addis Ababa, we had the Israeli embassy and the Jewish agency helping us, giving us some education, teaching us Hebrew, giving us some nutrition because my parents didn't have any income. So they were feeding us every day. We would walk about 40 minutes to the school, the Jewish school, inside the Israeli embassy, where they used to give us some education and feed us 2 meals a day, and then we'll go walk back home. That was about 2 years.
40 minutes walking everywhere.
About 40 minutes walking.
And you were 10 years old. My
yes.
son won't walk alone one block in New York City.
It's a different generation. My kids are not going to walk that too. It's just totally a different generation. And then while we were hoping, you know, that our turn will come through, and we're going to move to Israel, a civil war took place between North Ethiopia and in Ethiopia. And at that point, the Israeli embassy and the Israeli government and the American government were very much worried about what's going to happen during the civil war for the Jewish people who left their villages and moved to the city. And within less than like 24 hours, they made a decision to move the Ethiopian Jewish out of Ethiopia as soon as possible. So the American government was involved in the ceasefire that took place for about 36 hours. And they had a serious negotiation with the robbers and the Ethiopian government. And they had a ceasefire for 36 hours. And then that morning we heard, oh, you have to leave everything behind. You have to walk to the embassy because today you're going to fly to Israel. So we left everything, walked about 40 minutes. Thousands of people were waiting outside of the Israeli embassy. It was a total chaos in Ethiopia. People were screaming, soldiers everywhere. The prime minister of Ethiopia left the country. And for hours, we were waiting to go to Israeli embassy. And about through the night, we made it inside the embassy and they took us to the airport and we were on the way to Jerusalem. That [S2] Wow. [S1] Was an amazing experience. Although we were tired, we didn't have water or any food, but we were so happy that finally the dream comes through and we're wow. about to land to the Holy Land.
Yeah, and it is nice hearing about the American government being involved in ceasefires that save Jews rather than risk Jews and kill Jews. So you arrive in Israel, and I remember once seeing an interview or a speech by an Ethiopian Jewish woman who said that she didn't know that there were non-black Jews. All the Jews that she had met her entire life have been Ethiopian Jews, and she had no idea.
There's white Jews?
That there are white Jews or light-skinned Jews. And, you know.
Yeah.
What was your experience landing in Israel, Jerusalem, in the country, in the state of Israel, all of a sudden being the not just the Jew in Ethiopia, but an Ethiopian Jew in Israel?
Yeah, so that's really an amazing story because we didn't know what Israel looked like. We didn't know who lives in Israel, but we know like one day we have to end up there. And then when the Ethiopian Israeli embassy opened, so we saw white Jewish people who were there to help us. And then when we arrived to Israel, you see a country full of white Jewish people who really welcomed us. I remember when we arrived at the airport, one of the first things my grandma did, she was, and my parents were kissing the ground and crying. As a child, I did the same thing. And the next things you know, I see like female soldiers coming, helping us, giving us water, welcoming us. It was incredible. It was an amazing moment. Here I go. There is a people who doesn't look like you physically, but they are here to welcome you and help you to adjust to the Israeli society. Every evening, you know, every start is hard. I'm not going to lie to you. When I walked to the class, I was the only black girl in that class. I didn't speak Hebrew at all. But at the same time, I had great people around me who made the transition easily for me, starting from the Israeli government, the way they welcome us, the way they welcome my parents. It is helping us every month, you know, with everything that my parents needed and giving us the education that we needed. And the Israeli government very soon realized when they brought the Ethiopian immigrant to Israel, we're talking about, unfortunately, a very poor country. Many of the Ethiopian Jews were agriculture field. So no education at all. My parents didn't know how to write and read in their own language. So they knew the move from a country like Ethiopia to very advanced country like Israel and stuff, especially when you don't speak the language and you don't have any education. Therefore, the way they welcomed the Ethiopian Jewish was different. You know, in Israel, you see Jewish people coming from all over the countries, like all over the world. But in this specific group, they had to invest more on us. So our transition to the Israeli society would be easier. And that's the help I received. I'm talking to you like finishing high school with all the help that was surrounded around me, and then joining the IDF, which was an amazing experience itself. As a person, I felt like I got very mature, and I felt like I'm giving back to the country that gave me this beautiful life. And I learned so much and so many skills that really helped me to become who I am right now. And then the beautiful things in that army also, you see people with different background from different parts of the world. They are together to defend Israel, which was such an special moment or years for me. And then after that, again, the Israeli government realized we need to help, we need to do better with the Ethiopian community, because again, there is not education. And I'm sure you agree with me, education is the key for a better future.
I wouldn't be a professor and I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't believe in education.
100%. So that opportunity was given to us as well. You know, when I went to do my bachelor degree and my master degree, the Israeli government totally supported me. So I did my bachelor degree, master degree in Tel Aviv University. And that's what really helped me to achieve my dreams.
It's quite incredible that you said your parents couldn't even read and write in their own language. Within one generation, you have a bachelor's from the Technion, and then a master's from Tel Aviv University, and you're here in the United States.
It's incredible. It's really incredible. And it's a moment, you know, you appreciate what you went through in life and what you achieved as a human being. And it's a moment of pride and also appreciation for people who are there with me, though I can become who I am right now.
And so we will get to who you are right now. But before that, did you always know that you wanted to be involved in politics? Because I read that you were very involved. You were a student activist.
Yes.
When you went to university. So was that by accident? Was that what you were trying to achieve? Tell me.
So in general, I like to be involved. I believe in things not working the way you think they are working. You need to be involved. You can't complain from the outside. I am a big believer. You need to learn the subject and you have to be involved if you want to make a change. So since I was young, I was involved with the student's life, to improve students' life, to be a voice for a student. At some point, I also was the chairwoman of the National Ethiopian Student Organization for 2 years.
The chairwoman of
the National Ethiopian Student Organization.
So for entire Israel, not just your university?
The entire Israel for the Ethiopian Israelis.
Wow.
For 2 years. So I guess that's also lead a lot of things later on for me to continue to be involved in general. So that was an amazing experience as well. You know, as a student, you know, you have to be involved. You have to understand the how society works. You have to understand if there is any concern about something, you have to voice yourself. But everything has to be in a most peaceful way. And I did it. I used to bring students together. We used to voice ourselves. But everything was really peaceful and in a way it's supposed to be. I encourage students to be involved. I love seeing young generation students taking, some step and doing something. And I think it's a beautiful thing. And we have it in the United States and in, civilized countries where students can voice themselves, which is amazing. I believe in training young generation to lead in the future. And being involved in that level is really helping you. You build a lot.
But then What do you feel like, or what goes through your mind when you see student protesters in Columbia, at Harvard, all over the country, calling you a white colonizer?
It is nonsense.
It makes absolute no sense, right? You're not a colonizer, but clearly also you're not white.
100%. And this is what they don't know. So many people don't know what Israel is about. They really don't know. They are getting the wrong information. I don't know who's teaching them. And it's kind of disappointing because you would expect students, you know, when you go to universities, you know, you are there to research. You are there to learn. And you would expect some truth to what they are saying out there. And they don't have a clue what Israel is about. They don't have a clue that close to 2 million Arab Muslims living in Israel. I can tell you, in Haifa University, we have the biggest Arab Muslims students in Haifa University. Three of my best friends in Haifa University, they were Muslim. Mm. Three of my best friends, I was sitting and learning with them. So for them to lie that Israel doesn't give this equal opportunity, it is disgraceful. It is obviously you don't have any truth what you're saying. When you go to Haifa universities and even in a Rambam hospital in north of Israel, you see so many Arab Muslim doctors. My husband went to medical school in Technion. And he was doing, you know, all those studying at Rambam Hospital. One of his good friend, who was in charge of one of the department, the internal medicine department, was Arab. Until a few years ago, we used to be in touch still. So for them to really spread lies about Israel, telling that Israel is an apartheid country, Israel is the most colorful society. You see it all. You see everyone. Black, white, Muslim, Druze, Jew, Christians. Israel giving equal opportunity to everyone. Everyone. And something that I'm so proud that I was growing up in Israel. I know what Israel is about. So when I talk about Israel, I speak about Israel proudly. Because I know the fact. I grew up in Israel. I know what Israeli society is about.
Yeah.
So I wish the students here really get the truth about Israel. And if you don't know, research. Go to visit. You are welcome to go to visit. Go talk to people. See, learn.
I think it's extremely important that people accept the fact that they don't know everything, because I don't know everything. That's why you go and you learn and you educate yourself, and if you have the possibility, experiencing it on the ground. A few days ago, I ran into Mark Ruffalo, who, you know, when he's not pretending to be the big Hulk, a 50-year-old man getting millions of dollars being a green monster, he spews lies and hate about Israel. And he has 28 million followers. And I asked him, Mark, have you ever been to Israel? And he said, no. And I said, you are a multimillionaire. You have time, you have money. Why don't you go and visit Israel? Then also visit the West Bank. I'm not saying only is visit everyone, talk to everyone, talk to the people, and then come back and see if you want to keep doing what you're doing. Because he was explaining to me what Israel is like. And I told him, you can't explain to someone who lived it for 27 years while I was there, and then still living it, all my family is there.
Yeah.
You can't explain to me what my life is like.
I agree. And I think that's the best advice we can do. I mean, there is not lie. You can go and check it out.
And by the way, I will never tell a Palestinian from Gaza what their life is like. I can look at the facts. I can look at the statistics. But I can't tell them what their life is like on the ground, because that's not me. Mark 100%. Ruffalo can't do it either, because he's never been there either.
I agree 100%.
So here's another way you break the mold. You mentioned your husband you met when you were students. So you, again, reminding people, and at the time were a Jewish Israeli-Ethiopian Jew studying in Haifa, and your husband, a Ukrainian-born Jew who moved to the U.S., became an American-Ukrainian Jew, presumably light-skinned.
Yes.
Moved to Israel for medical school. How did that connection happen?
It's you know, God's ways, I guess. You know, he was born in Ukraine, grew up in Ukraine. When he was 14, he came with his family here. And when he finished college, he decided to go to learn about Israel. He had family living in Israel as well. He said, that's a great opportunity for me to get to know Israel. So he moved there. And at school, we got to know each other. I never had any plan to move here, really, because I was very comfortable. I was getting my education, my family in Israel. But we just had a great relationship and then moved here to New York. And we started our lives here. And we are parents of 7 children. Thanks,
seven
God.
7 children.
Yeah.
What ages?
The oldest one is 16. And then I have 15, 12, and 9, 6, and then my twin girls, they are 3.
Wow. I have 2 children, and that's 3 too many.
Yeah, that's a lot. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, but, you know, it's just...
So you moved to the U.S. What were the... Did you jump right into politics when you moved to the U.S.?
No, not really. I was... traveling around the country, and believe it or not, even back then, I mean, I'm talking about 18 years ago, I...
So 2006?
2005, 2006, I was working with nonprofit organization, and mainly we were trying to build a bridge between the United States and Israel, because not a lot of people know things about Israel. I never thought, I did it for many years. I was traveling around the country. I was meeting students, Jewish, non-Jewish, the African-American community, and all over, just talking about Israel, just educating them what Israel is about, and even to tell them about the fact that there is Ethiopian Jewish living in Israel. And I did it for many, many years. It was an amazing opportunity to build that bridge, really, to get to know Israel for many people where they didn't have a clue there's a Black Jew living in Israel, Black Jewish community living in Israel.
What were those interactions like, those conversations? Like, people see you for the first time, you completely break all their stereotypes.
It was for them, they were amazed. Again, they didn't have any clue there's Black people living in Israel, Israeli citizens. And by telling the story, they got to know Israel better. And I remember one of my trip was to Atlanta with my good friend. His name is Joey Lowe. He has this organization. It's called Israel at Heart. I work with him. And we went to Atlanta to meet Martin Luther King's friends. So we visited his home, his church. And I basically met his friends who told me about Martin Luther King. And I met the community. It was just inspiring and amazing day that I will never gonna forget.
Wow.
Yeah.
And when you travel around the United States, you carry many identities, but you carry 2 marginalized identities, right? You carry the identity as a Jewish woman, and you carry the identity as a Black woman, like a woman born and raised in Africa. How is that experience? What are your experiences like with those 2 different identities?
For me, very natural. Again, you know, I'm telling you.
Of course. I mean, it's who you are.
The reaction?
The reactions, yes.
People
are shocked.
You should
be interviewing me, right?
<Yeah. laughs> No. That's, they were shocked. You know, so many of them, they didn't have a clue. When I talked to them about Operation Solomon, when Israel brought about 14,500 Ethiopian Jews in the middle of a civil war, within 36 hours, in jumbo military jet, they shocked. They wow, that's incredible. That's amazing. And then when I telling them about the IDF service, you know, when I serve in the army, they are amazed, you know, to see. And I'm telling them, in Israel, if you are a woman, if you want, you can join the army. It's like
my mom, my aunt, my sister was an officer, my wife,
her
sister, like everyone.
Exactly. But for Americans, they don't know all the facts. So when you're telling them, they're like, wow, that's incredible. That's amazing. Your journey is amazing. How you made it, from village to Israel and then serving in the army and then getting your education. And now you are here, like Nassau County legislator, being involved in politics, having, seven children, a woman. They're all like, wow, it is amazing how you're doing it. And they're very, very warm, very supportive.
So you traveled around the country building these bridges with this nonprofit. Then what? I read you were the vice president of your synagogue.
Yeah. So that I did it until I become a mother. And then when I was a mother, I did it for a little bit. And then it was very hard traveling around the country. So when I moved to Great Neck, it's always been in me that to be involved. I really believed being involved. It's the way it's supposed to be. You have to give back to your community. So in local election, for village election, I was involved. And I helped the mayor to get his seat. At that point, they appointed me to be a board member of the Architectural Review Board Committee. Mm-hmm. I did it for 2 years. And in the same time, I was involved within my synagogue with my rabbi.
That's important to note, because you were involved in something just because you care about the community.
Yeah.
It wasn't just Israel or Jewish. The Architectural
Board
Committee is like benefits everyone, Jews, non-Jews, Israelis, non-Israelis, anyone, And that's an important thing, I think, that people need to realize. Being someone who is an activist who wants to make the world a better place, it doesn't mean just for us, of course.
For everyone. Yeah. When I got involved, it wasn't about the Jewish people. Really not. It was about the community, how we improve the community, how we can build a strong community, how we can voice and understand the concern of the residents in Great Neck. And I never thought that's going to take me deep in politics. Really never. It was all about giving back. So that led to politics later on, which took place about 3.5 years ago. It was a conflict between Gaza and Israel. Over 3,500 rockets was coming within 10 days.
This is May 2021.
Yes. And anti-Semitism was, again, out of control. And my son was getting to his bar mitzvah, and I asked him what you would like to have for as a gift from your grandparents from Israel. He said he wanted the Star of David, and I said, "Oh, that's nice." I was surprised. I didn't expect a child. I thought he's gonna give me this crazy idea of gift, but he wanted a simple necklace with.
Yeah, like most 13-year-old boys would want, like a PlayStation and Xbox.
Something like this.
A trip to Disney or whatever.
Exactly, he wanted a necklace and with Star of David, and I was so proud.
You did a good job raising him.
I hope so. That's a goal. So I said, "Oh, that's wonderful. I'm sure Grandpa and Grandma would love to get that to you," but deep in my heart, I said, how am I going to give him a Star of David now? When anti-Semitism out of control, people are criticizing Israel. As a mother, I was like, it's not a good time. I was telling myself, I never told him. I did never want to say that to him because that's going to destroy him.
You were scared.
Yeah. So I was like, but then I said, wait, that doesn't make sense. I'm American. I live in this beautiful country. I'm raising 5 children and I was pregnant with a twin. If I am afraid to give my son, he had one request. He wanted a necklace with Star of David. If I'm afraid to give it to him, something is absolutely wrong. And it should not even come to my mind that I need to think about this. And I said, sure, you're going to get this. Don't worry about this. Get ready for your bar mitzvah. That was a moment I said, something wrong. I need to do better. I need to be involved more. I need to empower. I need to engage people to understand Israel. I need people to be proud. It doesn't matter who you are, really. Jew, non-Jew, wherever you are. You are living in the United States of America. You're supposed to be proud and do whatever makes you feel good. And then somehow they were looking a candidate to run for that county legislator seat, Nassau County. They came to me. And
who's they?
The Republican Party.
Uh-huh.
And I learned about the job. And I said, you know what? It's a perfect place right now to be involved, to bring people together, to build bridges. Because what is this? We are one nation. We have to love each other and we have to respect each other. And I felt like I can be that bridge. And then before I know it, I was very much involved in politics. So I ran for election. I was with 5 kids and pregnant with twin. It was a lot of stress, a big campaign. And then I gave birth. And 2 weeks after, I had to get up and shake people's hands and introduce myself because election is coming.
It's so interesting because most politicians go around kissing other people's babies. And you did the exact opposite.
They were...
But I think it's many people listening in would view you, and I think partially correctly, like you're a lioness, you're a hero. Like not only are you raising 7 children, you're like running for office while pregnant with twins. And they might feel like I could never do what she is doing. What do you think about that?
I know a lot of moms, they coming to me and telling me, Mazi, how are you doing this? This is how? You're pregnant, you're giving birth 10 days after you, standing up and engaging people, empowering people. And I can tell you that was the first time in that district, so many people went out to vote. Because they felt, if she's doing it, pregnant, running around, trying to engage people, of course we can be involved. Of course we can go to vote. That's the minimum we can do. And it was incredible to see. I can tell you, when I started my campaign, people were like, kind of lost the hope of, because, oh, we can't do it. It's not going to happen, you know. And I said, why are you talking like this? This is the beautiful things about our country. You are living in the United States of America. You can vote. You can voice your concern. You can lead. And in the last 3 years, what I am seeing is incredible. I am seeing like young kids, students taking, you know, leadership and being involved. And that's the most important things I can tell you, because we have so much to offer. Everyone can give something in different ways. Yes, it's not easy to be a mom. It's not easy to raise children. It doesn't matter if you have 1 child or 7 children or more. It's busy. Your life, you know, around them, you want to make sure they are good. But if you are thinking about your children and you want the safety of your children, the future of this country, you cannot just complain. If you think somebody was doing wrong job, get up, be involved, see what you can offer.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely right. And I've been very open about it. That's what pushed me out in the first place, my children. I wasn't thinking about the big problem of anti-Semitism. I wasn't thinking at the time about the Jewish students at Columbia. I was concerned about all of those things. It's not that I didn't care. I was concerned. But the thing that got me out into the streets is the understanding that my son was 8 and I have 10 years to make colleges around the country safe and better for him.
100%. This is our obligation, to be honest.
It's actually our job, right? Like 100%. Our job is to keep our children healthy and safe and educate them, help them thrive. Well, how can you keep your kids healthy and safe if you're not making the world healthier and safer?
100%. You know, it's like, I'm all about peace. I'm all about love and respect one another. No child, if you're Jewish or non-Jewish, should feel intimidated by other because of his faith or color or whatever it is in our country. There is not place for hate. We have to be very respectful of each other. And we cannot be silent when Jewish student being attacked, harassed. I can tell you so many kids in my district, students, kids from Colombia, by the way, When I came last year for the rally, they were shaking, like, we feel uncomfortable. I don't know. I'm afraid to walk from class to class. And the same students who told me that about 2 months ago, she said, oh, I don't think I'm going to make it. I can't go back to Colombia again. I said, of course you're going to go back. How? I said, you will. And we are here to support you. See, for me, it's disgraceful. Jewish student has to go through this. Jewish mother were calling me. They don't want to send them to Michigan. They don't want to send them to Colombia. They are so afraid. And when October 7 took place and all those rallies started, protests started in colleges, you know how many mothers, parents brought back their kids? They felt that their children left out alone without any protection. How sad is that? It's happening in 2024, in 2023, here in the United States.
I couldn't say it better. I really could not say it better. What was the first thing you did when you were elected? Not like celebration, but what was the first
stuff
we did? Legislation that you...
Yeah, in general, one of the first things I did, although I ran as a Republican, as soon as I got the seat, I really made it clear for everyone. I made it very clear. For me, it's not about Republican or Democrat. I am your elected official, and I care about each one of you. I'm here to hear you, to answer your needs. That's all. That was my statement, and I'm still standing by this statement because it's very important. Once you're elected, it's all about the people and all the people.
Even the people that didn't vote for you?
100%. And I was like meeting...
But they didn't want you there.
So what? They didn't know me. They didn't know me. And they have the right not to vote for me. That's okay. Now I am your elected official. I am your county legislator. And my job to answer you. You are equal. There's no different. And then when I did my tour and I was meeting different mayors... I can tell you some people said, oh, this village did not vote for you. The mayor not with you. You can't meet him. I said, what do you mean? I am the county legislator and I need to meet him. I need to hear his concerns because I'm representing everyone here. And I did it. And I'm very happy I did it. And then, you know, when I served the people for the first 2 years, they really saw who I am and why I'm doing this. Not always everything about politics. It all should be about the people. I'm a strong believer on that. And then when I was running the second time, the people did not vote for me. They didn't know me. They actually voted for me the second time. I never did it for that purpose, but that was the right things to do. And it's answering phone calls, people's emails, and making sure things are working well in our district. Starting from road issues we have, supporting small businesses and bringing safety to the county. Safety, I can tell you, one of the biggest concerns for my district when I got elected. Supporting law enforcement. I'm a big believer. We have to support law enforcement. You know, if you are not happy with the law enforcement, let's have a conversation. Let's talk how we can change things, how we can improve things. You can't call all law enforcement, they are bad.
Yeah.
You don't want to live in the country that without law enforcement. I know it because I grew up in Ethiopia. There's not law enforcement. You are by yourself. Anything can happen to you.
You know, one of the things that I mentioned in that situation about the importance of nuance, so, and I've been open about this, before October 7, before everything, the summer of 2022, I was involved in the pro-democracy protests in Israel. By sheer luck, fate, whatever you want to call it, I was at a protest and was punched by an officer, by a police officer. And that kind of threw me into the fray of like speaking up against police brutality in Israel. That night I had it easy. Other people got off much harder. And there were people trying to like get me to like say all cops are bastards and like, the, you know, burn the police. My uncle is a cop. Nothing is black and white. Nothing is simple. And I was not angry at the police officer that punched me. I was angry at the situation that police officer was thrown into and was told, do whatever's necessary. But it's never the case that all X, whatever the group is, all X are bad. Never,
and should never be like this. My sister, she's a cop in Israel. I know what it takes to be a cop and to raise children and being out in the field and protecting and the people. So I have big respect to this. And you're right, not everybody's the same. There is good cops and bad cops. But you know what? When we have a healthy conversation with our law enforcement, we can solve problem. We can solve problem together. But you can't attack law enforcement. You can't defund them. You can't nonstop really like torturing them. It's not fair. They're putting their life for us to protect us. So we have to respect. We have to appreciate. And if there is any issues we need to fix, absolutely we should do that.
We should be criticizing and critical when they overstep. And there have been horrible situations, especially with the African-American community, but with other communities. And we should call it out.
I agree.
We also need to find solutions. It's not enough just to say, here's a problem.
100%.
So I want to talk about one amazing solution that you were not just a part of. You were the instrumental. The bill that passed at Nassau County called Unmask the Hate. Tell me about the problem that the bill is solving and then how it solves it.
Yeah, so the bill we passed in August 5th was a bill that called Mask Transparency Act. Basically, before COVID in New York State, you weren't allowing to go with mask, ski mask, and covering your face in public. That was the law over 175 years.
Right. The basic thing about society is that we have to see each other and be accountable to each other.
100%. That was the law. And then COVID came. And, you know, mask was very important. So they completely stopped that law so people can protect their health. What's happening right now, unfortunately, so many bad actors using that law by covering themselves and breaking laws, hiding their identity and thinking, ain't nobody gonna stop us because nobody knows who I am. I can curse,
right.
Can spread hate, I can attack physically people, I am covered. Therefore, I am protected.
I can wave the Hamas flag, the Hezbollah flag. I can call Bin Laden, you know, a hero. I can do a lot of things because I am masked.
Exactly. And as you know, when those terrorist supporters come into rallies, they have specific direction how they should come. They're telling them how to cover their faces so nobody will see them. Saying they can do whatever they want. So they're coming prepared, completely covered, and they're breaking laws. And we have been seeing that since October 7. And things are out of control. And as I said at the beginning, safety is my biggest concern. And I said, that's wrong. Just in even Columbia University, after what those students did, the DA, and then let them go because they could not recognize them. And that is a big problem. I'm all about go, rally, voice yourself. Absolutely, this is your right, you should do it. But you cannot cover your face, harass, attack other individual because you are masked and nobody gonna stop you. And it's all about safety. We spoke our law enforcement in Nassau County and other people even using masks for just to go rob people's homes,
so
take
what,
people's cars.
So what is this new bill?
So this bill is very simple. You are not allowing to go with mask face covered or with ski mask, whatever it is, to hide your identity in order to break a law, basically. So that mask bill giving for the people, for the law enforcement, is a tool to engage in conversation. Right after I passed that mask.
So let me just understand. So I'm a police officer. I see someone with a mask.
You can, if you feel like that person is walking around and starting something, the police officer have a right to engage in a conversation.
Right.
Now, in that bill, we made sure people who has health concern, they still can go with mask, no problem at all. If you have any cultural event, you want to, you know, like there's different holidays, you have masks, that's also okay. But that mask bill, what is doing really, a conversation. Right after I passed the bill, I think a week or 2 weeks after, our law enforcement stopped a man with ski mask with a knife, big knife.
A 14-inch knife, yeah. A tack knife. It was. I saw the pictures.
Exactly. So what the police officer did at that point, he wanted to know, you know, what's going on. And they found out what's going on. They were able to engage in a conversation and find out the attention of that person.
So it was interesting case because the reason you started this bill was because of these anti-Jewish, anti-Israel, anti-American protests. But what it ended up doing is making everyone safer, right? Because I saw the video, the police officers saw a man at night wearing a ski mask and they come up to him like, it's the law, you have to tell us who you are. And then they found this attack knife on him.
So you're right. When I came up with this idea, the truth is I thought about safety. It wasn't about just the Jewish people. It was about safety in everyone. Like, okay, if people are breaking the law because they can cover themselves, that's bad. We need to make sure like our residents are safe. So when we spoke with law enforcement, they told us that's a great tool. It's going to help us. So it's not just protecting the Jewish community against those protesters or terrorist supporters, is really bringing safety to the entire county. Now, Governor Hochul spoke about this as well. During month of May, she spoke about unmasked those people who's going to train in the subway. Remember one of the guy was screaming, if you are Zionist, you have to leave. She mentioned that, which was nice, but she never did anything with that. So when you see your state is out of control, people using masks as excuse to hide their identity and attacking other people, as the governor of this state, you should absolutely support the bill and pass it. You will protect everyone. Everyone, not just the Jewish community. You're going to bring safety to our state.
So for people that are listening in and want to pass a similar law in their city council, their county, their state, what can they do?
Very simple. It's really not, so complicated, especially because we had that bill before COVID. So you're really bringing, and by the way, we had that bill back then to protect the minority, the African-American groups against the KKK. They were going with hoodies and spreading hate. That was the reason why New York State and Virginia and other places did it. So this is the same law that came to protect everyone's safety, and especially the minority back then. This is the time to bring it back, to be honest. Why everybody's silent? Why the New York City, they don't do that? Why Governor Hochul, she entertained the idea, but she never did it? Why is that? Why? Because attacking the Jewish community is okay? That's not a big deal?
We Jews need to stand up and say, this is what we demand.
100%. It's very simple. They can get the copy of the bill if they want to. They can really check it out and do something about this. It is bringing safety to everyone. It's going to benefit the residents of New York State. You know how many calls I'm getting? Phone calls, text messages. People will stop me. I will go to the supermarket, to the mall. Oh, Mazi, that was a brilliant idea. Thank you for passing it. So many people will go out of their way to message me through Instagram or text me or call me and will stop me just to thank me. And I'm like, wow, I'm happy to hear that. But the truth is, it's not complicated. We can do that. And unfortunately, you see, a lot of times it's all power and politics.
Yeah.
It's a simple things to do. And you ask yourself, what's happening? Why Governor Hochul, she's afraid to do so? Why, it's going to cost her a vote?
That's what she's afraid of.
And it's very sad. Yeah. It's really sad. We need to put a lot of pressure on her to do the right things, to protect all the residents.
Yeah, I think from, and I really think it's from district or county, city, district, township, whatever. Every place in the United States need to have a very simple and common sense rule. You can say whatever you want. You can be hateful, but show us your face.
100%. I agree.
Mazi, this is incredible. And before we finish this conversation, I want to ask you, what's next for you?
Very simple. In terms of politics.
So you cannot be the president. But other than being the president, what's next for you?
I really don't know. All I care right now is really to serve the Nassau County resident, especially the 10th district, as a county legislator. I have another year to go with this, and we'll see whatever God going to bring. I will think about this and take it. And all I care really to serve the people and to bring love, kindness, unity, and understanding each other and serving the people, the American people. Elected officials need to do that. It's not always about power. It's not always about the next seat. Don't just promise, because promising sounds amazing. Do it. People have a faith on you when they decided to vote for you. Talk is cheap. We need elected official who really taking action. It is missing in this country. And it's very shame. And I feel bad for the people, to be honest. Because the average resident, they don't know the politics around it. They don't know what's going on with this. Like, they don't know what's happening behind it.
Have you ever thought of going back and being the Israeli prime minister? Because I think I want you there.
Oh, I'm here. I love United States. I love this country. My kids are here. And I love Israel. My family is in Israel. Right now, I'm here as American. Love this country. Care about the people. And I want to serve the people in the best ways possible.
Love that. All right, so I finish every episode with what I call a Jewish lightning round. It's a series of questions. There's no right or wrong answer. You just tell me the first thing that comes to mind. You get one pass, and I get to decide whether you get that pass. Mazi, what is one thing people don't know about you?
I care about the people.
I think they know that about you.
I don't know. Some people will think, she's just another politician. I really not. And I will say things that maybe, I don't like to promise people that I cannot deliver. So a lot of time politics is just about promising and they don't deliver. I hate doing that.
What is one thing people don't know about the Jews?
The Jewish nation is a beautiful nation, a kind nation. Really, it is also in our Torah, in our Bible. You have to be kind. You have to give. And I don't think they really understand that. And especially the Jewish nation, it's a peaceful nation. The Israeli nation, they want a peace. They want to live, with the Palestinian people with peace. Mm-hmm. No mother sending her kids to army to be killed. That's not why parents sending it, to defend Israel, but not to evaluate life. We don't celebrate jump when accidentally some Palestinians are dying. We don't. We value life.
I have a feeling like you're going to pass on this question, but what is your favorite curse? Hebrew, English, Amhari.
Favorite curse? Like curse?
Yeah. Klala.
Whoa. I got this. Can I get a pass on that?
You'll get a pass.
I don't like to curse.
When was the last time you cried?
Last time I cried. Oh, I cried a lot after October 7. I really cried a lot. It was every video I saw was painful. And I will tell myself, don't watch it. Then I said, I have to watch it. I have to watch it. But one moment killed me the most, really, and I remember that a lot also. When the rescue mission, the Israeli rescue mission, one of the guys spoke about a body of a mother who was pregnant. They found the baby out. They stepped the mother, the baby, and they basically opened the mom's stomach and took the baby, stepped him and stepped her. That the image, unfortunately, is still in mind. And I'm wondering how evil you can be to do something like this.
Unfortunately, that image is something that happened to our people during the pogroms, during the Crusades, during the Holocaust. Nothing
stuff.
New. So it's Friday when we're recording this. So if you could have any person over for Shabbat dinner from any moment in history, who would that be?
Right now, I would love to have Trump and my
really?
Shabbat dinner.
Really?
Yeah.
I have to ask, tell me more.
First of all, I would
You're going to get me canceled by half of the audience and then loved by the other half.
That's okay.
You know, but
that's okay. And that's okay, really. I would like to thank him for what he has done, especially to support Israel and the Jewish nation. Mm. And unfortunately, he doesn't get enough credit. You see, I told you about politics. There's people who likes to talk. And majority of the politician, that's what they do. And when it comes to Trump, is a man of action. He did. He did a lot. He did things that other presidents was thinking about this, never delivered. Whether recognizing Jerusalem as a capital of Israel, whether understanding the north, the Golan, is belong to Israel, and whether to bring a peace. When was the last time any president brought a peace in Middle East? I have big respect to that because we are missing a peace. The world is upside down. And I'm concerned, I'm worried about the future of Israel. I'm worried about America. I'm worried about the Jewish people. What about bringing and making peace, real action? Not just, you know, everything sounds amazing. We will do a peace. But do it. That takes leadership. And President Trump did it. The Abraham Accord is the only president who made it. I really, truly believe if he had a chance to do more, he will deliver. The world is upside down right now. The war in Ukraine, the war in Israel is because of weak and cheap politics.
And I do have to say for the audience is that, you know, the importance of this show, this podcast, is that Jewish civil rights is above and beyond politics.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I don't censor anyone for their politics. You know, I tell people I keep my politics, you know, to myself. Although, like, I do tell people yeah. I have very strong opinions.
And I know
about it.
And I respect you for that.
And I keep it for myself, not because I don't think it's important to express your political opinion, but because I want people to understand that it's okay to disagree.
Yeah.
If we are all in the same big tent.
I agree 100%. But I just feel this time in our lives, we need leaders, real leaders. Leaders who care about the people, want to do the right for the people.
Yeah,
that is missing in our country. And that's missing around the country, around the world, to be honest.
What's your favorite Jewish holiday?
Wow. I love Purim.
Purim.
You know, you put the mask and you...
That's very ironic that you have the unmasked bill. And no, that's you like okay. the one day. You'll give one us one day with
but
a
you're
mask.
Doing it for peaceful things. You know, I love seeing the kids. I love seeing the adult. You can be whoever you want and enjoy. Enjoy Purim. Yeah. You can be a superhero and anything you want. And it's just bringing me, even as a mother, to be a child. Just to be a child, to have a fun day. Not being just a parent.
What's your least favorite Jewish holiday?
I love everything, really. There is not least favorite. Mm. I mean, the fast, I love it because you connect in like Yom Kippur when you fast. And I fast more than Yom Kippur. I fast other, you know. Tanat Esther, Tisha B'Av. I fast a lot of them. But it's just hard. the long fast, but I love the fact that it's giving you the opportunity to connect to yourself, to, you know, to whoever you believe, in my case, to God. But the fast, it's not fun. You want to be with food.
When do you feel safest?
When I feel safest? What do you mean?
When? Or where do you feel like the most safe? Yeah.
I feel safe every Saturday. That's the Shabbat, because I keep Shabbat. I don't drive or doing the typical things that you do. It's a peaceful and a safe time for me, mm-hmm. that I relax, I connect to God, and I connect to my children in a very spiritual, a peaceful, a safe moment.
Yeah.
As a Jewish mother.
When do you feel least safe?
Least safe? During the night. I don't like to walk around in the night. When the night comes, I like to be at my home.
Yeah. What gives you hope?
What's give me hope? At this point, really? To see so many young kids being involved. Something that I don't remember. And I can tell you, in this case, a lot of Jewish young people are involved. When I go to rally, I see them on the street, very proud, very strong. They realize this is their fight. That's giving me a hope. That is the future leaders, and seeing them taking action, taking leadership, this makes me feel good.
What's the first thing that comes to mind when you think of the words Jewish civil rights?
Voice yourself. Jewish, a voice, I mean, as a Jew, you have to voice yourself. You cannot no longer live in this bubble of somebody else will do the job. It's on you. Every group had to go through a fight to make sure, you know, everybody's listening to their concern, to get your right. Nobody will do the job. It's on you to do the job. If it's going to require to be on the street and rally peacefully, you better do it. If it's required on election process, you better go out and vote. Is it required for you to run for office? You better do it.
Wow. Amen. Amen.
We done or not?
Finally, every episode, I urge the listeners to donate to one charity that does good in Israel or across the Jewish diaspora. Where would you want people to donate to this week?
Wow. So there's a lot of great organizations out there doing amazing things. But the one I will ask, I'm sure you know about Beit Lochem, the Wounded Soldiers. So many of them, after October 7, their life changed. We're talking about people who lost their legs, arms. They were never going to go back to what they used to be. They put their lives to save others. And sometimes, you know, people who remember you as a hero at that moment will come to you, will hug you, kiss you, thank you. They move out, and you stay with that condition. You can never go back to have that full body that you can help yourself. Oh, so many people mentally got affected by this terrible war. So Beit Lochem, helping the wounded soldiers. And it's just an amazing organization, because those soldiers need to be helped, to help them to recover, to get to the normal life as possible. I will recommend that.
Mazi, where can people find you?
I guess on...
What's your social media?
Instagram.
Yeah.
Mazi, Our Legislator.
So M-A-Z-I, Our Legislator.
Yes. Very easy. And you are welcome. If there's anything I can do, anything I can collaborate with, I encourage everybody to follow me. And we can team, we can work together, we can change the world to a better place for our children.
I love that. And, you know, I've been saying this for so long. Everyone's been saying this. Hate is not rational. When people go out and scream their hatred, if they show how uninformed they are, and, you know, being called white supremacists, white colonizers, and it's just irrational. And you, a person that breaks all the molds from your identity as a woman, your identity as a Black woman, your identity as a Jewish woman, your identity as an Israeli woman, you break all the molds, and you're just, your existence shows who's right and who's wrong. Thank you so much for being here, and I'm glad to say that here I am with Mazi Pilip.
Thank you, Shai. It's an honor to be next to you here, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to have this interview with you.
Hi, I'm Michael Greenspan, Shai's father-in-law. I'd like to thank you for listening to the Here I Am podcast with Shai Davidai. Here I Am is recorded at The Cave Production House in Hackensack, New Jersey, and is brought to you in partnership with Abby Sophia and Adamit Productions. You can find us on Instagram, YouTube, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'd also like to extend my deepest gratitude to everyone at Adamit Productions for turning Shai's dream into a reality, and to all our donors and partners for their unwavering commitment to fighting for Jewish civil rights. Most importantly, I'd like to thank you, our listeners. Let's be honest, none of this would have been possible without your support and dedication. Showing up is half the battle. Thank you for showing up. Thank you for being there. Thank you for saying, "Here I am."